The Liberty Lounge, brought to you every Friday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific Time here on Just Measures Radio Network. Listen to classic country music in the Liberty Lounge to help you end your week on a pleasant note. We'll have sad songs.
I go out walking after midnight.
Happy songs.
I'm the happiest girl in the whole USA.
Patriotic songs.
There's a star-spangled banner waving somewhere in a distant land so many miles.
Songs of tragedy.
Two little boys and an old family dog by the banks of a stream said one day.
Love songs.
Welcome to my world.
And good old honky-tonk music.
I'm a honky-tonk man, and I can't seem to stop.
So join me every Friday night and just let your hair down for a couple of hours here on Liberty Lounge.
I think are right, and I can stand beside that tear to stand and fight. I do believe there's a dream for everyone. This is our country. There's room enough here for science to live, and there's room enough here for religion to forgive and try to understand all the people of this land. This is our country. From the East Coast to the West Coast, down the Dixie Highway, back home. This is our country. Land, help the poor and common man. This is our country. From the East Coast to the West Coast, down the Dixie Highway, back home. This is our country.
the truth. You can't handle the truth.
But you can find it right here on The Shooting Bench. Coming up next.
Son, we live in a world that has walls, and those walls have to be guarded by men with guns. Who's going to do it? You? I have a greater responsibility than you can possibly fathom. You have that luxury. You have the luxury of not knowing what I know. And my existence, while grotesque and incomprehensible to you, saves lives. You don't want the truth because deep down in places you don't talk about at parties, you want me on that wall.
You need The Shooting Bench.
We use words like honor, code, loyalty. We use these words as the backbone of a life spent defending something. You use them as a punchline.
And I am sick of the lies and the deceit and the intrusions on my privacy and the invasion of my home. And we do not intend to take this lying down.
I have neither the time nor the inclination to explain myself to a man who rises and sleeps under the blanket of the very freedom that I provide and then questions the manner in which I provide it. I would rather you just said thank you. And
so, anyway, looks like we're back. Welcome to The Shooting Bench. It's the 24th of September, and it's Wednesday. Usually I'm a little late on Wednesday because of my Boy Scouts, but it turned out tonight that I was able to get away from there on time, so we're just going to continue to march here. Lots of stuff going on. Got wars going here on all fronts, stuff going on out at the ranch. We've got some classes coming up out there. Probably the most important right now will be the Glock Armorers class and the Disaster Preparedness Seminar in Lincoln, California. I talked to a couple of my contacts in Farmington, New Mexico. We're going to get the same combination of classes going over there. We've got a six-day close protection class coming up probably in January. We haven't set a date on that yet. We're trying to get some other things set up. We're going to, hey, there's 007 in there tonight. Snyder, Texas. Boy, I tell you, I could tell you some stories about Snyder, son. I've been Snyder for a while. But, anyway. Also in Stockton, Utah. Getting some classes going out there. So all this stuff is coming together pretty quickly. And we'll get dates and everything out for you. The dates that are confirmed right now is the one in Lincoln, California, 18th and 19th of October. And also the, the Survival Rendezvous, Survivalist Rendezvous, coming up the 8th through the 11th of November. That will be in Young, Arizona. 15th of November will be a private gun show in Prescott, Arizona. 15th and 16th, my private gun show. That means no dealers allowed. Restoring America's Heritage. Will you come and trade guns however you see fit, following all state, local, and federal laws? And don't worry about all the paperwork, background checks and stuff, because there won't be any dealers available. All perfectly legal. It scares some folks, but you just have to be scared, I guess, because it's perfectly legal the way we do it. And let's see. I think that's it. By the way, we're scheduling a meeting next week to go and talk with Arsenal. I think we've got a deal set up with Arsenal where we're going to be carrying some of the full line of Arsenal AKs, and we'll have some rental guns out there for classes and whatnot. So I think that's going to be a good deal. Arsenal AKs are of all the ones that are made, I'll tell you, Fuller makes some good ones too. And I don't want to take anything away from Jim Fuller. He makes a damn fine gun. Problem is, he's a little smaller and is not quite able to keep up with the things that we need to do. But Arsenal makes a fine, fine AK. And the accuracy that you can get out of Arsenal AKs is second to none, as far as I know. they shoot exceedingly well. So I intend to have me a couple of those here pretty shortly. So anyway, I'm going to have to go to the People's Republic of California here before long. And, of course, I can't take any AKs out there. I can, but I just don't want to get caught with them. So we're going to take a couple of lever-action 44s out there with us for our long guns. And we'll anything else we take will be locked away and put up in such a way as to not be a bother to anybody, if you know what I mean. And, all right, let's move on. Let me switch screens here. And we'll go on to bigger and better things. We got lots of stuff to talk about. We are going to get into some gun-related stuff tonight. And it's going to be a interesting discussion. I think the FBI has been listening to the Shooting Bench. So we'll get more into that later. Now, this is a we're going to start out kind of slowly. This is not too exciting. It would tick me off if I was... if this was my kid. But here's an 8th grade boy. Now this kind of stuff right here, this goes along with the Common Core deal. It goes along with the I don't know what it goes along with. This is astounding to me. But this just happened 5 days ago in California, wouldn't you know it. 8th grade boy given detention because he shared his lunch with his friend. With a fellow student. It wasn't somebody from, you know, off campus or anything. Kid had, he's 13 years old, had a chicken burrito with a friend who didn't like the cheese sandwich the cafeteria served him. And this guy said he didn't see any problem with sharing his food. It seemed like he couldn't get a normal lunch. Now, this is, you know, we talked last night about, was it last night? Yeah. About, who was it, Missouri and Alabama, a couple other states that are forsaking Michelle Obama's lunch program. They're just, they're dropping it and consequently losing the funding that goes along with it. But here's why right here. He said it seemed like he couldn't get a normal lunch, so I just wanted to give him mine because I wasn't really that hungry. It was just going to go in the garbage if I didn't eat it. So, and this was in Northern California, too. It says it has rules against sharing food to avoid issues with students' allergies. Now, this kind of goes along with the... These are eighth graders. They're not first graders. This kind of goes along with what we were talking about in depth last night about personal, you know, individual rights and whatnot. If you want to share a lunch at... you know, 13, 14 years old, you should probably, if you have an allergy, you know, my daughter for a while had, was allergic to peanuts, mostly lots of different kinds of nuts, but mostly peanuts. And she knew that from the time she was about 12, maybe younger. And we never, not one time, not a single incident ever had a problem because she's big enough to know that the peanuts weren't good for her. So if a kid has an allergy with something, then probably how is serving cheese sandwiches, unbelievable. How is serving this other stuff, how does that ensure that a kid doesn't have an allergy to something that you're eating there, that the school is serving? So they've just got a policy against sharing food, which I think is ridiculous. But anyway, the superintendent there told the TV station hygiene issues are also a concern when it comes to banning students from sharing food. You know, so what? I'm going to take a bite off my sandwich and I've had enough of it and I'll give it to my friend. My friend's been over at the house before, and we've shared, you know, Cokes and whatever. I don't know. This maybe these people, or maybe I'm the one that screwed up, but this seems kind of stupid to me. It says because of safety and liability, we cannot allow students to actually exchange meals. And the kid's mother thinks she did the right thing. By all means, the school can teach them math and arithmetic and physical education. But when it comes to morals, manners, and compassion, I believe that needs to be at home with the parents. Yeah, I'm okay with that. She said her son should not be punished for being compassionate. And Kyle says he'd share his lunch again if a friend asked him to. So, you know, the comments here, somebody said, please tell me this is a joke. He was punished for sharing. I don't know. I just don't have anything else to say about that. I don't know. It's crazy to me. Let's see. 007, you have never shot a 30-30. You have got to be kidding me. How old are you? I have to fix that. Wow. You'll love it. 30-30 is an exceedingly awesome gun. I really like a 30-30. I like all lever actions. No, I don't like all lever actions. I'm not wild about the Browning VLR. I like all Marlin lever actions. We've spent a lot of time talking about lever actions here. I've got a 357. I've got 244s and a 30-30. All Marlins. All of them shoot excellent. Matter of fact, I was out at the ranch this last weekend, and we did quite a bit of shooting. And what I was planning on spending some more time with my 44s, and didn't get a chance to. So I got out there and just checked it real quick at 100 yards. It looked fine. I shot at a B-27 Silhouette out at 200 yards with it, with open sights. Let me check. Somebody's saying I've got 0x0. Okay, everything looks good to me. Sound okay. Who does not have sound? Queso said they don't have it. Pumpkin Cat, you said sound. Does that mean it's gone? Or you have sound? It's going once. Going twice. Somebody give me a sign. Let's see a show of hands here. Okay, well, I don't see anybody complaining about it here. The no 32. All right, let me check and see what's going on with the... 32 looks to be running. 64 looks to be running. I don't know what to tell you guys. Everything seems to be going real well. Doc, I'd have to disagree with that. I think the 357 is an excellent little carbine cartridge. Heck, you know, 125 grain bullets, I can get those out there at 2100 feet a second, and that's a hell of a lot. Got a whole lot more poop to it than 30 carbine does, and some of these other carbine cartridges. I think it's probably the single best of the pistol carbine cartridges. I don't know how it could get any better. I absolutely love that 357. I've killed deer and coyotes and everything else with it. It gets out there pretty respectably, for my money anyway. Let's see. Does everybody got sound? They get their 64 is okay. Let's see. 32's back up. All right, looks like we're back in business here. All right. Anyway, we could get off on lever actions and carbines here pretty easy, because that's one of my passions is those little lever. They're just so well balanced and so shoot so well, easy, quick handling. You know, what's not to love about them? I mean, they're fast shooting. Keep them running. You know, when you're with reloads while you're shooting. I mean, it's just a heck of a neat little gun. Let's see. Okay, so minor logistics and convenience factor in having handgun and rifle chambered in the same cartridge, but the disadvantages outweigh them. I don't know, Doc. Enlighten us with your wisdom. I'm having a hard time understanding what you mean there. The Okay, there's a Doc's a 44 fan. We've got, I don't have any 44 handguns anymore. I've got rid of all of them. And I'd actually gotten rid of my 44 carbine. And the guy come into the shop there while we were still in Sholo and had just offered me a heck of a good deal that I couldn't pass up. And so I managed to acquire another one. One of the older ones without that stupid crossbolt safety on it. And practically brand new, immaculate. Got it at a real good price, so I got back in 44 business again. And that's okay because I really missed my 44. And of course, the one I had like a gazillion rounds put through it, so it's nice to have a newer one. Then I picked up another one here just a week ago, and it's missing an ejector. So for, you know, $15, I'll put an ejector in it, and it's all in pretty decent shape. They've cut the stock off a little short, so I'm going to try to find a butt stock for it. And so we'll have a match set of them. I have one for me and one for Amy, and that'll be our politically correct fighting rifles while we're in the People's Republic when we can't take our AKs and stuff. But of course it doesn't hold a candle to the 30-30. It's not a rifle cartridge, it's a handgun cartridge. You ought to know that. It's not, that's comparing apples and oranges there. The 357 is not even remotely anything that 30-30 will be. But it's higher capacity, lighter recoil. You can feed it out of the same pocket as your revolver. It's good out to 200 yards as far as whitetail and coyotes and stuff like that. Mule deer, I'd probably want to keep it 150 or less. But for the convenience of that, man, I don't know how you could get any better. But I do have a 30-30 also, and it is a shooting fool. Good night, babe. And I'm not 100% convinced that I prefer the one over the other as far as the 44 and the 357 go. I like them both. They're two totally different classes there. The 44 is, I don't know. I've killed a lot of small game with it too, and coyotes and whatnot. But that 357 is just a dream to shoot. If you're not a reloader, quite naturally, the 357 is the way to go because ammunition is a whole lot cheaper, especially when you go into some 38s. You get some plus P 38s in that 357, and it's a pretty good little package for. You can put, I believe, two more rounds in the magazine when you go with 38s, and it's kind of like shooting kind of like taking 22 long rifle and shoot it in a revolver and then take the same round and put it in a what am I trying to say here? Shooting
the
30.
The D.C. City Council will allow
what?
People to carry concealed handguns for the first time in almost 40 years.
Where did you
the
come from?
The bill was drafted to comply with a previous court ruling that struck down the city's ban on carrying handguns outside of the home.
Thank you. Appreciate that. We'll share that a little later. We're not quite ready for that yet. Let's see. Yeah, I think when you shoot the plus P38s in a 357 carbine, you're getting a little better performance than you would with a 357 Magnum revolver. And when you shoot the 357s out of the carbine, you're getting probably, on the average, depending on the weight of the bullet, you're getting about 400 feet a second more out of it. And that's pretty damn significant. And, of course, 44 is the same way. You get about 400 feet or so, depending on how you've got the how you've got them loaded and whatnot.
That's I don't know, Doc. That's stretching a little bit, being roughly on par with a 30 carbine. That 357 smokes the hell out of a 30 carbine out of a rifle. I mean, it murders it. There's a huge difference in there. When you take a 158 grain bullet at 1600 feet a second compared to a 110 grain bullet at 2100 or something like that. Look at the Taylor factor on that. It kills that 30 carbine. All right, let's move on here. Now, you know, every once in a while, we come up with a very weird story. This is a very weird story. It's kind of a, like, sick story. But it's funny. So... And who would think of this gal has got to be a liberal? I can't imagine who would have thought of doing this. But her dog, a little Jack Russell Terrier, got in a fight with another dog, which was a Staffordshire Terrier. And the dog was eating this little Jack Russell up. Had him around the neck. Couldn't get it loose. The two women there, neither one of them could get them apart. And she said that Staffordshire Terrier had her puppy in his mouth and was chucking it around like a rag doll. Couldn't get it to stop. One of the women, the one that owned the Staffordshire Terrier, had a dog bite off part of her toe in the process, and she had plastic surgery to treat the injury. And nothing seemed to work until who in the hell would think about this? She saved the day with her finger. She couldn't figure out what to do. Evidently didn't have a gun. Couldn't pull them apart. It couldn't call 911. Didn't know what to do. So you know what she did? This is a true story. She picked the dog's tail up and stuck her finger up its butt. Yeah, anal passage, she calls it. She said, I lifted up the Staffordshire Terrier's tail. Luckily, I hadn't filed my nails, and I put my finger up its anal passage. I had to do something, and that's what came to me. This little story now has a led to a global trend here, if you want to join in on the fun, of hashtag superstar finger. One of them said, traditionally, of course, you buy a dog a drink first. And... Well, the little dog was so surprised, I mean, how could you not be, that that she let go of the Jack Russell and thus saved her life. And who would think to do that? I mean, I might have drop kicked the two of them across the street or something. But this woman says, Lexi, meaning the Jack Russell Terrier, is my soulmate, and I love her so much. I was so glad that she was actually saved because I would be lost. Honey, I think you're lost anyway. I have a problem with that, really. okay, that's enough of that. We're going past our break here, so we're gonna have to take a little break here, about a foot long, and we'll be back. Let me change this around here just a little bit. I'm gonna put that down there and put that up there and do this right here, and there we go.
And all you can do is laugh at her. Doesn't anybody know how to pray? Tear up your rainbow shades, Arizona.
young, you must be crazy. There ain't a single thing you've done that's gonna faze me.
And it has taught me how to stand and fight for what I believe in. I guess that's just how I was raised.
Stop looking for salvation in this system. The system is not going to fix itself. If the system is restored, it will be restored with the hammer of patriotism smacking this system out between the anvil of freedom and teaching this system that there is a shape we wanted to maintain and that we have the forge of rage, and we will put that system in that forge of rage, and we will use that hammer of liberty and pound it against the anvil of freedom until it returns to the shape we want it to be in.
Here we go now.
There, stand up and salute while we play the Redneck National Anthem.
Redneck, don't give a darn, a redneck. Raised on a farm, I'm a redneck. I'm a six-pack king, I'm a redneck. Just a doing my thing, a redneck.
It's a redneck country cowboy state of mind.
Yeah.
painted sun. They all run along and have some fun. I'll see you when you get back. Bet I'll be up all night, still cleaning this gun. When they stopped to make their play, and the swiftness of the Ranger is still talked about today. Texas red and not cleared leather, for a bullet fairly ripped, and the Ranger's aim was deadly, with the big iron on his hip, big iron on his hip.
All right, we're back here. And, Doc, I would have to agree with you that if they needed a carbine. I think the carbine was a great idea for the paratroopers and whatnot. And it's a neat, fun little gun to play with. But for a fighting gun, geez, you've got to be kidding me. I think something out of the, with the 45 ACP, 30-06, I don't know, it might be a little rich in a small, light, handy carbine like that, but the 45 ACP probably would have been a little better. But to me, that 30 carbine is rather pathetic. I've never wanted one. They're fun to play with, but I've just got no use for them. For those of you that hold any stock in the Taylor Factor, which I do, a substantial amount of faith in that. All the things that I've tested and whatnot, the pathetic little carbine comes out at about a 9.6, which is quite a bit less than a 357 in a handgun, a 4-inch handgun at that. But the 357 in a carbine goes out to 14 something, which is what would you compare that to? 14 is just under, no, actually that's over, that's more than 7.62 by 39. Now 7.62 by 39 would have been a great carbine for the paratroopers and whatnot to carry. And I don't know why we figured that we were too good for that. You know, it's already been invented and all we had to do is, there's 100 other little guns out there that work well with that caliber. And I think that would have been a great idea, but evidently the powers that be at the time didn't think it was such a great idea. So, but I'd have to figure it out here what the Thompson. I don't know what the velocity of the Thompson would be with a 45, but I'm sure it would stomp a water hole in that M1 carbine for that. I just think it's a pathetic little. Little cartridge there. Yeah, actually 1946 was when that was invented, so it would have been right in the middle of the or the beginning of the war there. When was it over with? I don't remember. But anyway, for all the years that they carried that 30 carbine after that, you know, the 7.62 by 39 would have been a great choice for that. And I don't know why they, well, yeah, I do too. Never mind. I was thinking about the, I don't suppose they've had too many lever actions still in service after that. They, although they did have for a while, and I've seen one actually, they had the Model 94, Winchester served in the United States Army for a while. They even had a version of it that had a bayonet lug on it, and it took the well, it wasn't the M7, it was the earlier one before that, but anyway, it was I saw one at the Winchester Museum in Cody, Wyoming, and quite a setup. And I guess at the time that was a that was like probably like the soldiers that got rid of their 03A3s and were issued M1 Grands, you know, or something, when they got those lever actions in service. I imagine that was a pretty good jump up in firepower there. I bet the guys enjoyed that. The let's see. Only when I have something else to compare it to, 007. That wouldn't have been my first choice, but under the circumstances, the way that, and Doc makes sense. I mean, that was for the calibers that they had at the time. Why throw another one in there? We already had 45s. Why not have a little carbine to go with it? Besides the Thompson, you know, a regular little semi-automatic carbine with a little longer barrel and everything. We've already had. Why have one more caliber to carry around? I think that makes perfect sense. But speaking of, I'm going to skip some of this other stuff here, because I told you earlier that I think the FBI has been listening to the Shooting Bench, because now they're changing their tune a little bit, and they've got quite a bit of new information here on the 9mm. And for those that, and I've said this over and over and over, if I thought there was anything wrong with the 9mm, I wouldn't let Amy carry one. But I think that with modern ammunition, modern guns, I think things have changed. Things changed with the 45 ACP. You know, for years and years and years, the 9mm actually had better one-shot stop probability than the 45 ACP did, by like 10%, up until the 230 grain Federal Hydra shot came out. Then that's when it jumped ahead of the 9mm. But then as the 9mm progressed, it only stayed 3% behind the 45. Well, now they're looking at, with these new bullets and everything, their primary concern is that it gets 12 inches of penetration in ballistic gelatin. They get the 12 inches. They want at least that much so that if you're going through from, you know, a large man from the side or whatever, they want to make sure that you've got at least 12 inches of penetration. And with this new ammunition, they're getting that. With the 124 grain jacketed hollow point at 1181 feet a second, they're getting about looks like right at 13 inches here. The 147 grain goes quite a bit more. As a matter of fact, the 147 is at 1032 feet a second, is as far as penetration goes. Obviously not in as much energy, but the 40 is on par with the 40 Smith & Wesson, 180 grain hollow point. So that's saying something, because that 40 is pretty tough to beat. It's a tough deal. The 230 grain hollow point in the 45 ACP is behind both of them. It's down with the 357 SIG is... 357 SIG and the 165 grain 40 Smith & Wesson were virtually identical. And but here's the reasons that they gave. Now, see if this doesn't sound familiar, that those of you that's been listening for a few years. The executive summary of justification of law enforcement partners here, SBI Training Division, FBI Academy, Quantico, Virginia. caliber debates have existed in law enforcement for decades. Most of what is common knowledge with ammunition and its effects on the human target are rooted in myth and folklore. And boy, I couldn't, you couldn't make that any clearer right there. I had a man once tell me, stood there with his bare face hanging out, a grown man, tell me that when he was in Vietnam or Korea or wherever in the hell he was at, that he saw a .45 actually suck a guy, hit him so hard in the top half of his body that it pulled him out of the manhole and put him on his back outside the manhole. Not manhole, foxhole. What am I thinking about? Outside the foxhole. No. That didn't happen. Didn't happen at all. I've shot jackrabbits before that didn't knock them over. I shot a jackrabbit once in Kansas with a .45, probably run 600 yards before my dog caught it and brought it back to me. Not that it was a, it may have done the same thing with any caliber. I'm just saying that the .45 didn't blow it up, knock it down, turn it inside out, or anything else. But without going into a bunch of caliber bashing on anything, any other caliber, the 9mm will do anything that you want. That you think you need done. The it doesn't have the energy of either the 45 or the 40 or the 357s. Actually, if you take a plus P plus 9mm, it's virtually identical to the 357 SIG, and same diameter and all of that. So that's not a real intelligent argument right there. Yeah, Doc, I don't know what I was thinking about. I said manhole. It was foxhole. But no educated adult can really believe, at least when you're talking to gun people, that you could yank a guy out of a foxhole when he was hit with a .45. No. It's not going to happen. It's ridiculous. But anyway, let's get back here to the, that last deal said most of what is, and they have common knowledge in parentheses here, I mean in quotation marks, common knowledge with ammunition and its effects on the human target are rooted in myth and folklore. All of you, every last one of you, if you talk about guns with people, you hear the most incredibly retarded arguments for their particular caliber and what it does. You know, I had a guy tell me in over in Luna that he had shot a black bear in the head, whatever, three or four times, whatever, with 44 Magnum, and it wasn't enough gun for him. Spud, the 44 Magnum has put down elephants with the right bullet. Larry Kelly killed 5 elephants with 44 Magnum. Got 22 inches of penetration with some bullets that he had specially made for it. 44 will kill anything that walks the face of this planet with the right bullet and right shot placement. And that's true for a lot of calibers, actually. I've killed more deer with a 22 than most people's ever seen. And like Doc said, well, that doesn't make it a deer gun by any means. It's what do you mean? Now, according to this thing here, I still have sound. Zero by zero. Is everybody out of sound? Damn it. Let me check and see what's going on here. All right, let's see. That looks good. And that looks good. And that looks good. And the recording says we're still recording. Let's see. Okay. All right, let me unplug this thing one more time, see what happens. Everything looks good on my end. Okay, how's that? Did our sound come back? Let's see here. Let me, while we're waiting on someone here to let me know. Sound, yes or no? Somebody, let's see a show of hands here. Hello? And we're waiting. Any sound here? Nothing. All right. Let's see. All right, let's move on. I don't know where I was at there when we had sound problems, but it looked like we're back in business now. What were we talking about before we were rudely interrupted by the sound gremlins again? I said that to Tinker because I asked if we had sound, and I couldn't get any answer from anybody. And then Desert Rat come in there and drum jaw got in there. So, you know, drum jaw had a unique problem. We'll get off the carbine thing here for a minute. Drum jaw had a problem that somebody had a Glock that wasn't working right. They'd got one of those ghost connectors. I forgot what you call them, but they're skeletonized. They've had the mold spores in here with us tonight. I haven't seen you for a while. Of course, he said he can't hear anyway, but. I give up. Some people say you've got it, and some other ones say you don't. So I don't know what to do. Just have to depend on the recording and the podcast, I guess. Drum Jaw's friend had put in that skeletonized version of the 3.5-pound connector that Ghost makes, and and the couldn't get the slide to come back, couldn't get the thing to work. Well, what had happened was that Ghost connector is slotted. They've taken the middle out of it and left the sides the same width as a standard stock connector. Okay, well, in theory, that's good because it's making that a little lighter. Lighter meaning same reason, and Doc would be familiar with this. You take a mainspring out of a Smith & Wesson revolver and take your Dremel tool or grinder or something, you thin down the outside and kind of wasp waste it a little bit and make it a little lighter. Lighter strength, that is. Well, Ghost did the same thing, except instead of cutting the outside down, they took the middle out. All right, well, this particular connector, the two sides, do you understand what I mean? You've got this connector here, which is basically a leaf spring, and it's flat, 3/16 of an inch or so wide. And they've cut the middle, a big slot out of the middle of it, to make it less powerful. Well, the two sides were not exactly flat with each other there. So when you went to pull the trigger or take the slide off, the back of the trigger bar was running into the edge of the slot in that connector. Put a stock connector in it, and it worked just fine. Now, Lone Wolf has, they've got kind of the same concept, except they, instead of taking the middle out, took the outside off of both of them, and so it was wasp wasted, so to speak. They'd cut the outside down and left the inside thin, so that the trigger bar was already setting on that part of the connector, so it never You understand what I'm saying here on the ghost connector? It would be setting on the edge, and then it has to go past the open spot, and it would run into the other edge. So you couldn't pull the slide back, and couldn't pull the trigger. Couldn't pull the trigger even when we finally got the slide off of it. So I called Drum John, kind of walked him through it there, and we couldn't figure it out for a little bit. And it was that silly ghost connector. So for you Glock owners, be advised that that is not, if you get a ghost connector, I forgot what there's a name for it, and I'm not sure what it is. Maybe Drum Jaw will type it in there. But anyway, apparently it sucks. So we put the stock connector back in it, and it runs just fine. So I'll have to agree for the most part, Doc. It depends on what you want to do with it, but I've had good luck with thinning that Smith & Wesson spring down a little bit. That way you can leave the leave that tension screw all the way down and then thin it just a little bit, and it works pretty well. But it is sure enough easy, real, real easy to screw up a perfume. You know, people will try to stretch a spring to make it more powerful. No, it doesn't work. People will try to cut springs down to make them less powerful. Usually that doesn't work. There are some notable exceptions, but I've sure ruined a lot of springs playing with that too. But we've got it down there. Drum Jaw just put that in the chat room. The Ghost EVO Light 3.5 pound connector, 3.5 connector. So I would say probably not a good thing to get into. And Queso, I'm not sure why you felt the need to put that steel guide rod in there. I've never ever used one of those. Never felt the need to. Some people do. I don't know why. All that does is give the place for the spring to ride. It has no tension or anything on it. But I've never had any desire to put that in there. But not that it hurts anything. There's nothing wrong with it. If you like them, then it's great. But all right, let me get back over here to what we were talking about with the 9mm. This guy there, this is, like I said, the executive summary of justification for this 9mm deal here. Projectiles are what ultimately wound our adversaries, and the projectile needs to be the basis for the discussion on what caliber is best. In all the major law enforcement calibers where there exist projectiles which have a high likelihood of failing in a shooting incident, and there are projectiles which have a high high wound incident likelihood of succeeding in a shooting incident. Handgun stopping power is simply a myth. Well, I don't know if I'd go quite that far, but the single most important factor in effectively wounding a human target is to have penetration to a scientifically valid depth. The FBI uses 12 to 18 inches. Law enforcement officers miss between 70 and 80% of the shots fired during a shooting incident. Contemporary projectiles since 2007 have dramatically increased the terminal effectiveness of many premium line law enforcement projectiles, emphasis on the 9mm Luger offerings. 9mm Luger now offers select projectiles which are, under identical testing conditions, outperforming most of the premium 40 Smith & Wesson and 45 Auto projectiles tested by the FBI. 9mm Luger offers higher magazine capacities, less recoil, lower cost, both in ammunition and wear on the weapons, and higher functional reliability rates in FBI weapons. The majority of FBI shooters are both faster in shot strings fired and more accurate with shooting a 9mm Luger versus a 40 Smith & Wesson, similar sized weapons. As much as I love the 40 caliber, I can't argue with that right there. I have always felt that if you you know, two or three good hits with a 9mm, if it takes that many, are a whole lot better than two or three good misses with a 40 or a 357 SIG or a 45 ACP or a 357 Magnum. Yes, if you hit them, you've probably got a better chance of putting them down quicker, possibly, with some of these other calibers. But when you look at some of the smaller framed agents and officers and some of the females and stuff, they flat shoot the 9mm better. If you shoot it better and you can hit better, then, you know, there's at least two stories that I know of grizzly bears being killed with 22s. Reason being, they kept shooting and putting the shots in the right place, and eventually the bear wound up dying. One of them was a woman that shot the bear out her kitchen window, who was in the process of tearing her front door off. And the other one was a man and a woman that were out hiking, and that's all they had. They were stuck in a position, and the guy just unloaded Mucho 22s into this bear's head, and it died. So there you go. There is little to no noticeable difference in the wound tracks between premium line law enforcement projectiles from 9mm Luger through the 45 Auto. Given contemporary bullet construction, law enforcement officers can field with proper bullet selection 9mm Lugers with all of the terminal performance potential of any law enforcement pistol caliber with none of the disadvantages present with the larger calibers. See, I know these guys listen to the shooting vets. We've talked about this stuff before. And we're going to talk about it some more in just a little bit, because we got to take a little break here, and then we'll do that. I got to go in and visit with my lovely wife and daughter for just a minute, and then we'll be back. So let's see, I'm going to throw that's all right, we're just going to leave it just like this. I'll be back in a minute.
I just hate stupid people.
Now you listen to me. Who the hell are you? You know. You all know exactly who I am. Say my name.
Do what? I don't have a damn clue who the hell you are.
Yeah, you do.
That's right.
Now, say my name.
John Galt on the Teotihuacan Radio Show, live Friday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern, only on the Just Measures Radio Network.
Join me in the Tinker's Shop Saturday evenings, 9 p.m. on JMR. Remember, we all are the library for those who come after us.
Back stands in the corner with the barrels are straight. I look out the window and over the gate. The big fat rabbits are jumping in the grass. Wait till they hear my old shotgun blast. Shotgun boogie.
Hi, I'm Coke Reynolds, inviting you to join me for the Shooting Bench PM, the evening edition. Shooting Bench PM is your source for all things guns. Guns, hunting, reloading, firearms training, competition, and a host of other firearms-related topics.
Look out, bushy tails. Tonight you'll be in the pot. Shotgun boogie. Draws a beat so fine. Look out, big boy. He's loaded all the time.
The Shooting Bench PM does not include news or politics unless it is directly related to your gun rights. Thursday evenings from 9 to 11 p.m. Mountain Time, right here on Just Measures Radio Network.
I'll be back, little gal, when your pappy runs out of shells.
Join us every Sunday for the Medic Shack.
The Emperor has been expecting you.
With your host, Chuck Hudson.
You know what the chain of command is? It's a chain I go get and beat you with till you understand who's in rank command.
Cat Ellis.
You're having far too much fun at my expense.
and our producer, Jacob Hudson.
Who is this genius?
Sundays, 7 p.m. Pacific, 11 p.m. Eastern, on the Just Measure Radio Network.
Folks had gathered round. There before them lay the body of the outlaw on the ground. Oh, he might have went on living, but he made one fatal slip when he tried to match the ranger with the big iron on his hip. Big iron on his hip. Big iron, big iron.
And that's right, Kay. So I think that, matter of fact, there's a couple of stories we was going to do tonight if we get around to it. Kay's will say he thinks cops would shoot much better considering a miss of someone's grandma. Well, you would think so, but that is absolutely not the case. That hasn't changed in decades here. Mold Sports, good to see you, buddy. I haven't seen you in here for quite a while. I'm glad you could make it in tonight. The LCR, the little crappy revolver from Ruger, available now in 9mm with moon clips. I never was a... did you need something?
How do you spell Debbie Frondevi?
Spell what?
Debbie Frondevi.
I think she's... I think look on her Facebook page. Okay, let me give this a minute and I'll show you. I never was a real big fan. I think that having a pistol with dual purpose or a revolver with dual purpose, if you are able to shoot 9mm out of a 38 or a 357 with moon clips or something, I think that's okay. But I'm not a fan at all of the Taurus has a neat little revolver with 9mm with moon clips, and I don't like them a bit. If it's a neat concept to be able to shoot the 9mm out of a revolver, but you've got to carry, you know, there's no way that you can just if you don't carry enough of these moon clips already loaded, then you're out of luck because there's nothing you can do to keep that gun running. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense whatsoever to me, other than for maybe a a competition gun, or maybe for small game hunting or something like that. But other than that, I just I don't get it at all. Let's see, she's using DEBI now. Yep, there you go. Had to help with a little logistical problem here. So, be that as it may, I know some people do like those, and that's fine. It's just that I don't. I keep stuttering here because I keep trying to keep up with the chat room here. All right, let's move on here. I'm getting sidetracked way too much. Getting new listeners here that think I'm an idiot and they'll never come back, which they're probably not too far from being right. Anyway, justification for law enforcement partners. This is still part of the FBI discussion here. It says, rarely in law enforcement does a topic stir more passionate debate than the choice of handgun caliber made by a law enforcement organization. Many voice their opinions by repeating the old adage, bigger is better, while others have heard of this one time where a smaller cartridge failed and a larger caliber would have performed much better. You guys have all heard these stories. I mean, this goes on at every range, everywhere in the world. It says some even subscribe to the belief that a caliber exists
which will provide a one-shot stop. It has been stated decisions on ammunition selection are particularly difficult because many of the pertinent issues related to handguns and ammunition are firmly rooted in myth and folklore. This still holds as true today as it did originally stated 20 years ago. That's when part of this thing was written here. And there's calibers that I don't like. It doesn't mean I don't like the 45. It doesn't mean that it won't work. And probably work well. I just don't like it. It doesn't make any sense to me to have something that nowadays, now maybe, you know, maybe 35, 40, 50 years ago, that would have been a different story. But nowadays, I just don't care for it. People are emotionally attached to it, and that's fine too. I am emotionally attached to several calibers myself. It's just 45 is not one of them. But I've never said that it wouldn't work. I just said I don't like it. I've seen it fail. I've seen 9mm fail. I've seen 40s fail. Although, I don't know. I don't know if I've ever seen the 40 really fail or not. I have never shot a people with it. But I shot a German Shepherd at 65 yards with one time. One shot, put him down. He never moved a muscle. I've shot two different, probably 600-pound beef steers with them. One shot, bang, they're down. Of course, I shot a 900-pound or maybe 1,100-pound pig one time with a 22. Put him down like a rock. Amy shot that goat with a 9mm. Did both shots. Excellent job. So, with modern cartridges, I just don't think once you get away from things like that 30 carbine and 38 special, and the 38 special was great in its day, but it's just like not anymore. If when you boy queso, you're itching for a switch in there. When Doc gets through with you, the 38 plus P's and plus P plus have taken that cartridge out of its realm there, out of its classification, got it up a little closer to 357 Magnum. But the original 38 was a 49% one-shot stopper. Nothing to brag about. When you get up into the plus P's and plus P plus, you get into 75, 80, 85%. And then the 125 grain 357 Magnum, 96-97% one shot stop probability. So anything will work. I just a lot of it depends on how well you will work, how you do your job. Don't hesitate, place the shots where they need to be placed, place them often enough to make them, you know, you keep placing the shots in the right place until it works. And that could be used, you know, there was a woman, Lieutenant Colonel Grossman talks about this in one of his Bulletproof Mind lecture, talks about a female cop that was shot 10 times, survived, and managed to kill 3 bad guys. But then I know a guy in Bloomfield, New Mexico, that accidentally caught a 9mm in the chest when just driving along minding his own business and died before he could get his truck parked. There's a guy in Farmington, New Mexico, was shot 7 times with a 45 ACP, still alive today. He's got one eye. I've told you that story before. But there was an accident in a motel room in Prescott, Arizona, where a guy accidentally shot his best friend with a 45 one time, center punched him, and he died on the way out the door. There was a soldier that was shot with a 45 ACP once. Accidentally, the gun went off, MP went off in the debriefing room, or the, what do they call it, the ready room. And the guy didn't even know he was shot, walked out the door, fell over dead. So, you know, there, I don't know, there, it don't matter, whatever you like,
you can find stories to support your affinity for whatever caliber or gun that you like. Whatever you don't like, there are plenty of stories out there to back up your whatever you don't like. So what this story does here with the FBI is justification for the 9mm is to be honest. They're telling you things that we've talked about here on the Shooting Bench 1,000 times. About, especially with modern, you know, I said the way the 45 was originally designed because they had fluffy powders and didn't have jacketed bullets and lots of factors, but it still was an awesome, incredible, step up in handgunning at the time, as Model T's were in cars. But, are you going to bed?
Yeah.
You sure are pretty.
Thanks.
I think I'm going to go with you. All right, guys, good night. I'll talk to you tomorrow. No. Anyway. Okay. You guys remember, let's get off of the gun thing here for a minute. We talked about this back when it happened. As a matter of fact, this would have been right after Just Measure's debut here. Just Measure started on officially on June 1st of 2011. Okay, so this would have been a year after we started, because it was in July of 2010 that we talked about this, and I was with another unmentioned network at the time, and we talked about the Gurkha soldier. You remember the guy that chopped the head off of one of his enemies and then got in trouble for it? Well, the reason he chopped the head off of this guy is not for the same reason that Muslims do. He completed his mission. He was told specifically, had very specific instructions to bring back proof that they got the right guy. So they wound up, due to circumstances, they had to kill the guy during the mission, and they were trying to get him out and bring him back to bring the whole body back for identification. But then they wound up in a very intense firefight with the Taliban, and they needed to break contact, but they also needed to complete their mission, which included being able to positively, without doubt, identify this guy that they went after. So this guy made a last minute decision and said, well, we can't carry this whole guy and get out of here in time. And, you know, blood type ain't going to do it, so they chopped his head off. You know, maybe didn't have fingerprints on file. Maybe they could have chopped a hand off and done, I don't know. But anyway, but it did allow the men to remain mobile enough and complete their objective. So he got in trouble. It took 4 years. And rather complimenting this, congratulating this soldier for keeping his place in the mission first and making this quick decision under fire and all that, they went on a campaign here of knocking him down and rushed him out of the country. Well, after 4 years, common sense has won out, and the soldier's finally being commended and brought back to duty and all that. So there's and if you look at the comments after that, they say, all right, yeah, they did good. Go and behead some more of them and go forth and behead Muslims all you want to. But, you know, I noticed something in the so you ain't wrong about that. There's not anybody I want to play with for sure. Something I'm noticing in the news, and I did see some corrections made today, finally, but a lot of these people are confusing all Muslims with ISIS or Islam or Taliban, and that is just not the case. There's so much stuff going around, and it has been for the last few years here, that it's getting where people won't trust any Muslim. And I will, and I've said this before, and I always will, is until someone, now if I know that they're connected with ISIS, if I know they're connected with Taliban or Al-Qaeda, you know, the gloves are off. All bets are off. Doesn't make any difference. I don't care what position you served in there, or what you've done, or if you've just started, or whatever, you deserve a bullet. But as much as I have kind of and Doc, that's a problem, because there's a lot of things in the Quran, if they follow it religiously, so to speak, then it's awfully hard to trust any of them. But I know, or at least I feel, that there are some out there that are as good as any of the rest of us. I would not, in good conscience, you know, there's so many remarks and stuff in Facebook posts and all this, that yeah, they need to just kill all the Muslims. And all that. I don't believe that. And I don't think God believes that. I think that... and in the first, emotionally, the first part, Queso, like you, the first part says, yeah, to hell with all of them. Let kill them all and let God sort them out. But that's not our job. As far as ISIS, Al-Qaeda, Taliban, anybody that's associated with Islam in any way, then that's fine. I am okay with that. I don't care what we do with it. I don't care how often we do it. I don't care where we do it. I don't care how messy it gets. You know, that's a whole different subject right there. But I know that I really feel that I have met Muslims that that I felt were on our side, and that they were just as good of people as a lot of others. So at the risk of my own safety, probably in some regards, before I would just shoot somebody simply for being a Muslim, they would have to prove to me that they deserved being shot. Now, being involved with ISIS or Taliban or Al-Qaeda or something, you've already proven that. But if I would rather... I would rather be killed than be wrong and kill somebody out of emotion and passion and be wrong about it. I do believe that I have a higher power to answer to when I leave here. And if I do that out of emotion without good reason, then I feel like I've compromised my salvation here, and I'm not willing to do that. If I make a mistake and do it, that's one thing. If I do it out of fear and emotion, that's quite another. So I think that those guys that went out there and peed all over the ones that they shot, I thought that was childish, uncalled for, ridiculous. They were dead. Did it make any difference to them? Probably not. But I think it was very, very childish and uncalled for. There was no reason. That's very unprofessional. If you have time to do that, you have time to be cleaning weapons, checking your gear. There's a lot of other things you can do. Obviously, I stand around and piss on Muslims. I thought that was stupid. But And, well, that's exactly what I said, Doc. Is you have to consider whether or not you're willing to kill someone who has sworn to kill you. If I feel like that they are in the process of doing that or going to do it, that's a whole different story. And that's what I said about ISIS, Al-Qaeda, and Taliban and all that. But there are a lot of people just like this. There's a lot of people in Vietnam. My uncle used to tell me stories about guys that he wouldn't even associate with when he got back to post because some of the things that they'd done out in the field, sheerly out of emotion, showing off, being they had lost their maturity and were doing things that were absolutely uncalled for. Totally against anything that decent person would probably do. Now, with that being said, I also understand that people lose their sense of what's right and wrong. Sometimes they get out there in the heat of battle and all the things going on around them, the things they've seen and experienced and hear and smell and everything else, they go kind of nuts. I understand that too. But I'm sure that they did that. I don't know if it was quite as prevalent back in in World War I, II. I think that we have progressively, as society degrades progressively here, and our morals and standards become less as time goes on. I think there's more of it goes on now. Not to say that it didn't go on, since the beginning of time. But I think that there was a period of time there when people were probably a little bit more I don't know whether mature is the right word or decent or professional. There was a time, I think you can see the same thing in law enforcement. You go back to the days when the Andy of Mayberry time, and then you look at the cops now. Cops did not used to do the things that they're doing now to the degree that they're doing it. I had never heard in my whole life growing up of a cop shooting a dog that wasn't absolutely called for. I've heard of many times of cops calling animal control, the dog catcher they used to call them, to come and take care of that so they could do their job instead of just shooting them. And now they shoot them just because they're there for no reason. I think the same thing could be applied to some of the atrocities that happen in war. There's always been some. But it seems that, and I think Doc put it very simply right there, that he's seen that kind of stuff. The better guys don't do it. I think that the more professional, the more emotionally stable guys don't do stuff like that. And when people start talking about, they're gonna do this, that, and the other before the war is even started, I don't think they're stable enough to even get out there and play anyway. If they're concentrating more on payback and revenge, vengeance, than they are accomplishing their mission. You probably see, and I say probably because I wasn't there, but I would expect that you would see more of the rank and file infantry guys do this than you would SEALs and Rangers and stuff. Not that I think that they're totally immune from it. I just think it's less likely that you would see it with them than with some of the other ones. There's Anonymous just posted a little deal there for you to check on. That's I haven't been, other than what I'm hearing in the news, I haven't been really keeping up with the Ebola thing. I mean, I know it's getting out of hand, and I know that, you know, I don't know what the hell to believe anymore. A lot of stuff going on. We skipped our bottom of the hour break. We'll just continue to march here. And so I think that that's, I just think we need to be bigger and better than that. I know a lot of people are focused on payback. How, like I said, you can only kill them once. They can only be so dead. What good does it do to pee on them after they're dead? What good does it do to mutilate the body? What good does it do to continue to shoot them? What good? I don't get it. You know, if the situation called for taking a life, then take it, be done with it, and go on, complete your mission, whatever it is that you need to do. But I don't know. I suspect, though, before this is over with, that we'll see one hell of a lot more of that very thing happening there. All right, let's get off of that for a minute, and let's go back over here. There are a couple of things I noticed that the Democrats have done. One of them is that they have launched a campaign here to try to get Rush Limbaugh off the air. First Amendment means nothing to these people. They want to get him off the air because he's right, more often than not. There's a petition to get him off the air straight from the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee in the form of a fundraising petition type email. The idea is to use the muscle of petition to in turn muscle Limbaugh's advertisers to drop him. You know what? Rush Limbaugh probably doesn't care. He has made so much money at this. I remember when I was in Atlanta several years ago, at that time, he was making $9 million a year. He was talking about becoming president. Somebody said, why don't you run for president? He said, I wouldn't take the pay cut. At that time, he was talking about making $9 million a year. I'm sure that he's probably close to doubled that by now. He could run for a long time with no advertisers right now. But it says the phony outrage is manifested with a toxic stew of lies crafted by the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee. And naturally, Sandra Fluke. They take Limbaugh's recent comments about sexual assault way, way out of context. Using the subject header petition, Rush Limbaugh off the air, this email says 300,000 signatures are needed. Demand Rush Limbaugh's sponsors pull their ads after his sexual assault comments. Sandra Fluke has been the target of disgusting sexist comments from Rush Limbaugh, so his latest abhorrent rant is no surprise to her. The Stand With Sandra and Help Us Hit 300,000 Signatures Today to put real pressure on Rush's advertisers to drop him once and for all. But anyway, let's see. The truth is, Limbaugh was talking about the proposed policy at Ohio State that would require explicit permission between students before engaging in any kind of sexual activity. Here's what Limbaugh said. He starts by quoting the proposal. He said, consent must be freely given, can be withdrawn at any time, and the absence of no does not mean yes. Okay, that makes perfect sense to me. Easy to understand. How many of you guys, Rush goes on to say, how many of you guys in your own experience with women have learned that no means yes if you know how to spot it? Let me tell you something. In this modern world, that is simply not tolerated. People aren't even going to try to understand that one. I mean, it used to be said, as it was a cliche. It used to be part of the advice young boys were given. See, that's what we got to change. We've got to reprogram the way we raise men. Why do you think permission every step of the way, clearly spelling out why, are all of these, why are all these not lawsuits just waiting to happen if one of these steps is not taken? Now, I don't see why anybody would take offense at that. I think it explains it very clearly how things used to be. You know, that you just got to take it in the right context. But anyway, I'm not going to read the rest of the story. That's the whole crux of the deal right there. But this goes along also with another story that I saw today. And that was a girl, real cute little blonde-headed gal, found Rick Perry at a restaurant and asked if she could have her picture taken with him. And being the cordial, obliging individual that Governor Perry is, he said, sure. So she snuggled right in up next to him and kind of got up under his arm and had an arm around him from the back and laid her hand kind of up on his chest. And right about the time the person was about to snap the picture, she flipped her middle finger out there, and he couldn't even see it, unbeknownst to him, until it made Facebook and the news and everything else. What a pathetic, sorry individual this woman is. For somebody that is that pleasant and nice and obliging and allows you to do that, and then you're going to go and do something crappy like that. Hard to believe. They are insane. Okay, so they're absolutely insane. They're just it's just unbelievable to me some of the things that those people say and do and all that. Moldspor posted this deal in here. Now, I don't know what how the White House is going to recover from this salute thing. We talked about that last night. I am at a complete loss for words here. Some of the things that I would like to say probably shouldn't be said in this venue right now. But surely somebody had to have told this scum-sucking moron how he is supposed to salute. I mean, I'm sure there's a little class on that, but since he was never in the military or anything. And to do that to these two sharp, young, perfect Marines is completely beyond my comprehension. I can't even imagine how they must feel. I imagine that they are, that there's a good example of what we were talking about a while ago. I imagine that they are professional enough. Remember, we still gotta address that and everything, put it in the mail. How else would she get it? Maybe we'll put them all in one envelope and do that. But that's what we were talking about a while ago. Sorry about the being off track there, but is these Marines are probably professional enough and look at him as a peon and won't mention anything about it, don't care, and they're just doing their job and doing it well, and are probably professional enough that they're not going to go into the barracks at night and say, oh, that faggot, I should have just kicked him in the face while he was doing it. I doubt very seriously that they would do that. Even though it would be okay with me if they did. I'd like to know what the damage control is doing here, trying to, this is all over. I mean, every other Facebook post available right now is about that. Here's a guy on Twitter that said, hard to put towards all the reasons I hate Obama, but this picture is a perfect symbol for it. The controversy was recalled Tuesday as Obama found himself in a new controversy after the White House released a brief video on its Instagram account on the president departing the Marine One helicopter. Actually, the White House didn't release that brief video. That was put out by one of the news reporters that caught that. And, you want to bed? Mm-hmm. Has his coffee cup in his right hand and salutes with it. The latte salute. What an arrogant, pathetic, despicable piece of garbage this president is. It just, Doc says the Starbucks salute now, yeah. The, Anonymous is right, he never has saluted. The last one that's, people can say what they want about George W. I don't believe half of what I hear about George W., but I'll tell you one thing. I don't care. I don't care what anybody says. I think that he respected the United States military. The things that I saw him do, and the runs that I saw him go on, and the bicycle rides, and the soldiers that he was holding in his arms, and the way that he saluted them. Matter of fact, that's one of the things that he said. At some point, I don't know if it was during his presidency or right afterwards, somebody asked him, what was your favorite thing about your presidency? And he said, I loved saluting those soldiers. He said that was the highlight of his day when he was able to do that. And, so, I don't hold the same, feelings for George W. that a lot of my listeners do. He may have done, maybe's about it. He did do a lot of things wrong. There's no such thing as a president that hasn't. But I had a lot of respect for George W. Bush. Maybe not for the things that he did as president. I mean, some of the decisions that he made and stuff, but the fact that he treated the soldiers very well. His wife was a class act, unlike that fat pig that hangs around with that pseudo-president right now. What a pathetic woman she is. Anyway. But... Yeah, so I don't know how well you remember Carter and everything, but he was always considered the worst president in the world until Obama came along. And I'll tell you, I would take Clinton back, I would take Carter back. None of them were as bad as this pathetic piece of garbage we got in there right now. And if you look back at the things that Carter and Clinton did, nothing that they did was as bad as what this guy does every day. Hey, Ranger just dropped in there. Anyway, I'm getting all worked up here over nothing. I think we've covered this. There's this a long, long story here on the 9mm that we've started and stopped half a dozen times. But it goes on. The interesting part here is about the medical realities. Penetration, permanent cavity, temporary cavity, fragmentation, psychology, tactical realities. this, I'm going to go in here just and read the conclusion of this before we sign off here. Actually, let me start with tactical realities. There's about four paragraphs here we'll finish up the show with. It said, shot placement is paramount, and law enforcement officers on the average strike an adversary with only 20% or 20 to 30% of the shots fired during a shooting incident. Given the reality that shot placement is paramount and difficult to achieve, given the myriad of variables present in a deadly force encounter, in obtaining effective incapacitation, the caliber used must maximize the likelihood of hitting vital organs. Typical law enforcement shootings result in only one or two solid torso hits on the adversary. This requires that any adversary like that, everybody's an adversary, you know. This requires that any projectile which strikes the torso such as has as high a probability as possible of penetrating deeply enough to disrupt a vital organ. The Ballistic Research Facility has conducted a test which compares similar-sized Glock pistols in both 40 Smith & Wesson and 9mm calibers to determine if more accurate and faster hits are achievable with one over the other. To date, the majority of the study participants have shot more quickly and more accurately with 9mm caliber Glock pistols. The 9mm provides struggling shooters the best chance of success while improving the speed and accuracy of the most skilled shooters. Conclusion: while some law enforcement agencies have transitioned to larger calibers with the 9mm Luger in recent years, they do so at the expense of reduced magazine capacity, more felt recoil, and given adequate projectile selection, no discernible increase in terminal performance. Other law enforcement organizations seem to be making the move back to 9mm Luger, taking advantage of the new technologies which are being applied to 9mm Luger projectiles. These organizations are providing their armed personnel the best chance of surviving a deadly force encounter, since they can expect faster and more accurate shot strings, higher magazine capacities and similar size weapons, and all of the terminal performance which can be expected from any law enforcement caliber projectile. Given the above realities and the fact that numerous ammunition manufacturers now make 9mm Luger service ammunition with outstanding premium line law enforcement projectiles, the move to 9mm Luger can now be viewed as a decided advantage for our armed law enforcement personnel. So, there's the whole story. And I first noticed this back in when I was still in Farmington. And that was when Farmington PD abandoned their 357 SIGs, and I thought surely that they would go to the 40, but they didn't. They went to a compensated Glock 17, and shortly after that, San Juan County Sheriff's Department followed them, and most everybody in the area did. I heard that Bloomfield kept with the 357 SIG. I don't know if that's the case now. That's been several years ago. So maybe I'll check with some of these guys. Matter of fact, 007 might even know. If not, Infidel should know if Bloomfield has changed yet. But I was kind of surprised that they went to the 9mm over the 40. But anyway, well, that's I think that's about as much fun as I want to have tonight. So I think we'll sneak on out here. I want to remind all of you that are in, near, around, don't mind driving a little bit into the People's Republic of California, if you're not already there, that the 18th and 19th of October will be a Glock Armorers class and a 8-hour disaster preparedness seminar on the 19th. And we're working on putting together the same classes in Farmington, New Mexico, or thereabouts, also in Stockton, Utah. And I noticed that our calendar was not all updated on the Shots Ranch, so I'm going to get on the guys tomorrow that's supposed to be taking care of that and make sure that these events are posted on there so that people can, if you want to go and partake of some of these things, then you need to know when and where it's at. So, with all that being said, I've had all the fun I can stand. So, I'm going to see y'all tomorrow for the all gun-related version of the Shooting Bench. I'll see you then. Good night.
Writing myself down to the fair and tell on Independence Day.
Okay, let's call it a day, and thank you for joining me. Join me every Monday through Friday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific Time for the Shooting Bench, right here on Just Measures Radio Network.
Let freedom free.
Thank you.